Anton Forsberg on waivers today. If you're New Jersey, would you claim him or would you wait for other options?
I think the name that a lot of people are going to be keeping eyes on is Aaron Dell, just because there's a little bit more of a proven track record in the National Hockey League. And because of Toronto's cap situation, I don't think anyone expects them to carry three goalies in the NHL this season. So that would... And then clearly the Leafs may be trying to wait this out a little bit because I think they probably know the same thing. So I think that's the target that's sort of on the top of everyone's list. Without having a full list in front of me, and there have been a lot of names on waivers today, I'm not sure that Forsberg would be ahead of a handful of other guys. He does have some experience, but not outside of that one AHL season, as much of a track record of success compared to some of the other options that are available. So, I would expect them to get him through waivers and for him to be their taxi squad guy and a guy who's well-positioned, as we've talked about in the past, for that type of role.
Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine, NHL.com, joins us. And what do you make of Corey Crawford's situation in New Jersey? And regardless of who they claim on waivers or something, do you think Mackenzie Blackwood might be the guy who ends up starting the most games in the NHL this year?
Well, he certainly could be a candidate for it alongside a guy like Connor Hellebuyck. And, Blackwood's a guy who's was ready for this role. And I know a lot of people linked a lot of big names to New Jersey over the past year. But to me, none of them made sense because of Blackwood. You didn't want to put a ceiling on this guy because he has shown so much promise at such an early age. To me, he's in that conversation, maybe right behind Carter Hart in terms of guys who have made this jump very early and looked as comfortable as him doing it. That said, a deal like Crawford's made sense because you added him in sort of a mentorship role and a guy who could sort of provide that for a couple of seasons. I just never saw them going long-term on anyone else because Blackwood is the future. I guess the future just arrives a little earlier. The downside if you're New Jersey is, they were hoping to compete and compete early. And as good as I think Blackwood is, you're going to need both guys to do that, I think, this season especially. They've got a really tough schedule out of the gate. They play in arguably the toughest division amongst the sort of newly formed four divisions that we've got in the NHL this year. So tons of games against really good teams. And it sort of puts them in a tough spot. If you look at their past couple of seasons, they've just stumbled badly out of the gates both years. And the goalies' numbers have been bad in the opening months of the season, both Blackwood and Corey Schneider, and then stabilized as the year went on. But if you look at the way the teams played, they've been really bad defensively early, too. Like, those things have kind of gone hand in hand. So you've got a new coach there. It'll be interesting to see what kind of an emphasis on their own end of the rink and if that changes with the coaching changes. But that's the tough part for them. Like, Blackwood's perfectly capable. But in a tough division, you lose that cushion, you lose that balance. And what you lose is that ability to, pull him out of the lineup for a couple of games. If you see things getting off the rails and giving him time to work on his game, you're going to have to be managing his rest more than you are managing his game. And that's a really tough part of the transition to number one for a young goaltender. And without Crawford, it gets even tougher.
Kev, we look, ahead now to, how the taxi squad will be unique. Dave Tippett's talked about it. You might some days use your third goaltender more in practice, give your starter rest, pretending. But the number one thing is to make sure that both your top two guys are ready. And if they want to face pucks, then they're going to face some shots. There's not going to be a lot of practice time. Let's be realistic. Just looking at, the Oilers play four games in the first 6 days. So after they practice today, they practice tomorrow. Then they start Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday. It's unlikely that they'll practice on Friday. Your backup might take the guy who played Wednesday will probably be on the ice on Friday because he's not going to play on Thursday, right? So it's going to be a unique year and maybe one. I don't know if you've talked to goalie coaches. How is it going to change for them this year? Is it just going to be more one-on-one stuff with goalie and goalie coaches?
Well, it kind of depends on how each team handles it. And I have heard some indicate that morning skates are going to be more of a teaching and practice and systems environment. It's not just go out and get the legs loose. But using that time as sort of like a practice time. And you know, the way they're going to manage goaltenders, and this will be different. It's interesting. I just asked Braden Holtby this, knowing full well that he hates the idea of three goalies being on the ice. Not a fan at all. Has made that clear in the past, and he's a workhorse. He's a guy that in Washington they had to sort of kick off the ice to get some rest because he kind of figures, as he said today, if he's here, he's here to work. And he does not like skipping practices. But I think with most teams, what you'll find is they're going to use that third goalie as guys start to wear down as a practice goalie almost. Get him out there, not necessarily so your one or your two can take a complete day off, but so that they can come out and maybe work with the goalie coach for half an hour before practice on the details that matter to them at that point in a season. But then get off the ice and let the number three goalie come in and handle the rest of practice, the line rushes, the power play drills, the stuff where the goalie is still going up and down, and every time you drop into a butterfly, it's the equivalent of four times your weight being applied in force to your knees and hips. Like, there's just no point. A lot of team practice really isn't that good for the goaltender, or really isn't, you know, it's not beneficial for the goaltender. I'm not saying it's detrimental. Some of it is, but it's just not beneficial. So get the work in you need to get done. Get off and let the third goalie come in. And, you know, I've talked about this in the past. That's why Devan Dubnyk played 38 straight games his first year in Minnesota, because they had two other goalies and they had that option. Goalie coaches around the league have talked about adopting that a little bit. But there's been pushback because players want to shoot on NHL goalies, not, you know, guys that are like, you know, equipment trainers that serve as the practice goalie. So that this year you have no excuse on that. There is no more of that pushback. Carey Price has already talked about this. It's exactly what he expects the Canadians to do. It's going to change not necessarily how often he works in terms of complete days off, but it's going to change how he works, how he practices. Get his time in with a goalie coach and let somebody else come in and deal with the team stuff.
Kevin Woodley from InGoal Magazine and NHL.com joins us. And Kev, the other one is, you know, we saw the, you know, goalie tiering, you know, Carey Price, some people like, oh, he's not a top tier goalie anymore. I'm really not ready to write off Carey Price just yet, in that regard. You got Connor Hellebuyck, obviously Vasilevsky's an elite goaltender. He might not have had a great start to the season, but he was really good in the second half and then the postseason. What do you make of the Jake Allen addition? Is that really going to benefit Carey Price?
I think it could, in that you saw in the bubble what you get when you have arrested Carey Price. Now, listen, I saw the pushback too heading into that playoff bubble, because you sort of had like two rounds of articles. The first ones were, oh man, Carey Price in the first round in a five game series could be the difference maker. Then the pushback was from analytics saying Carey Price hasn't been quote unquote elite since he won the Vezina and the Hart Trophy. What's that, 2015? That's 5 years ago, guys. Like, what are we talking about here? To me, I took a look at ClearSight Analytics numbers, and you know, last season wasn't his best, but he's just 1 year removed, two seasons ago, from saving the second most goals in the entire league, and based on shot quality. Only Andrei Vasilevsky 2 years ago was better by those metrics than Carey Price. So I don't buy into the "it's been 5 years since he's elite" crap, to be honest with you. And I think you saw in the bubble that he's still capable of being a difference maker. And what to me was interesting about the bubble and the playoff bubble was the aggression. Yeah, some people use the word, a couple goalie coaches I know use the word assertive. I would use the word aggressive. Like, the level of sort of aggressiveness in his game clearly ramped up in the playoff bubble. You watched how active he was in the crease, how much he played outside the blue ice. And it jumped out right away. And I wasn't just me. I had goalie coaches around the league talking about it. So if that's an element you get from arrested Carey Price compared to, say, hey, we got to play you 60 in a regular season, if he's able to have that much more energy and be that much more assertive in the crease and still have that aura about him, and I think being assertive and aggressive in the crease sort of almost makes it even more so. Like, you know, like, we sort of praise him for being this laid-back, calm, casual goaltender, but when you add a little depth and a little more challenge to his game, a little more bite to it, for lack of a better term, he can become even more intimidating for opposing shooters. So I still think that's there, absolutely, in his game, and that's why. And I thought it was interesting to note that at least someone in that article also noted that there was a different Carey in that playoff bubble than what they'd seen during the regular season, one of the panelists. And they're not wrong, because a lot of other people in the goalie community noticed it.
Kevin Woodley from Ingo Magazine and NHL.com joins us. Speaking of Braden Holtby, you know, I look at his last 3 years, his combined save percentage is .906. In the previous five full seasons in the NHL, it was .922. Right, like he was excellent for 5 years. He's also, over the last 8 years, Kevin, he's made the most starts of any goalie in the NHL. Is fatigue a factor? Does he maybe bounce back because he's had an extended break now? You know, like a lot of guys, he's played very few games in the last 10 months. Can he bounce back, or is there concern in, you know, in Vancouver that this guy just can't play as well as Markstrom did last year for Vancouver?
Oh, I think there's absolutely a concern, like the comparison to Markstrom. Like, you know, if you're asking him to go from what was the worst season of his career, Braden Holtby last year, to picking up by himself what Markstrom has done for this team for the last 2 years, yeah, there's a concern. That's a big ask. But if you're talking about can Braden Holtby bounce back from last season and be better, and can the Canucks, with a, in theory, better blue line and Thatcher Demko playing more and more of a tandem role, like, can they make up for the loss of Markstrom that way? That, I would say, there's a little less concern about. I see Braden Holtby having a bounce back, and I'm fascinated to watch how this goes, but I've seen some of the changes, again, just asked him about a couple of them, that he's been making with Ian Clark here. Very strong voice as a goalie coach, and, you know, just very demanding, and that fits with Braden's sort of, we talked earlier, sort of that workaholic mentality. And some of the changes, they look like they're taking root pretty quickly here in terms of the way he moves around the crease, the way he holds his stance, some of the post entry, some of the things, actually, interestingly enough, in that Athletical tiering article, that they talked about getting a little too old school in Braden's game, like that it drifted a little bit, that hadn't maybe kept up with the latest technique. He's inserted that quickly. He's got a new voice. It's a strong voice, and one he seems to, most importantly, have bought into. And so I could absolutely see a bounce back, but there's a big difference between a bounce back and pick up where Jacob Markstrom left off, and that's the risk if you're the Canucks, is that even if Holtby is great, you're also going to need Thatcher Demko to be good, because that's how good Jacob Markstrom was for the past two seasons here.
Kevin Woodley from Ingo Magazine and NHL.com joins us. Yeah, I agree. I went through the North Division today, Kevin. I ranked teams goaltending from 1 through 7. I had Vancouver 7th. Now, maybe I could have put them 6th ahead of Matt Murray, but, I actually had them, 7th only because, like, Thatcher Demko's played 34 games. Like, I know he played 3 really good in the playoffs, but in the regular season, he never had great numbers in those 34 games. So there are some question marks for me in Vancouver. Where would you rank them? You know, is Vancouver 6th or 7th, or am I missing someone in the top 5 that you would slide below those two teams?
That's an interesting one, and it kind of does depend on, you know, a lot of question marks. And so I think that, you know, I'd probably have them ahead of Ottawa. Because I think what you did see in the playoffs was Thatcher Demko's potential. Now, can he live up to it on a more regular basis? I'm not going to pretend nobody's pretending he's playing, what was it, .980 hockey for an entire season. But he showed you what he's capable of. And he did make some steps last year, both in terms of his technical game, but also just in terms of mentality and adjusting to the expectations when you do go in there and you are the guy. And it came with stuff. He stubbed his toe early, right? When Markstrom got hurt late in the season, right before they shut it down because of the pandemic, he struggled at first. And it took a few tough games. And you could sort of see this switch go for him where he started to figure it out and sort of let that pressure go and just go out and play. And so I think that was an important step. And I think it continued in the bubble. And so, again, predicting that level of play to continue would be asinine, but not expecting an improvement from the career numbers so far in the NHL that were sort of up until that point, I think that would also be a little unfair to him. Like, I think he's going to take a step here. You add that to Holtby, and, yeah, I'd have him a little higher up that list. I'd have them a little higher up that list. But when you look at the depth chart, one, two, like, I'd actually have their tandem, as much as Koskinen statistically for sure would be above them, Koskinen and Smith versus Holtby and Demko, I'd have that discussion. Then when you go to the third, you know, Forsberg's got more experience. The Canucks here are looking at probably Michael DiPietro as their number 3. And I think DiPietro took a big step in Utica last year, and he's probably ready for that. And he might be good in that role, but it's absolutely not what's right for his development this year. He needs to be playing in the American Hockey League. But short of them picking someone up off waivers, and I don't see that happening because I don't believe they want to carry a one-way contract in the NHL to keep a guy off waivers, it's either Michael DiPietro or Artur Silov. So, yeah, like depth chart 1 through 3, I think it's fair to drop them into the bottom of the North Division. But in terms of upside potential, when you combine Demko and what he's shown he's capable of, and a bounce back for Holtby, I think by the end of the year we could be ranking them a lot higher.
Kevin Woodley from Ingo Magazine and NHL.com joins. Yeah, we'll see how it goes. But like Mikko Koskinen, a lot of people around the league, like I saw, you know, where people ran, oh, he lets in some bad goals. He might let in bad goals, but when you look at his overall numbers, his numbers were actually fine. His numbers were quite good. They were top 15 in the NHL.
Hey,
like I find
choir,
that Mikko Koskinen's.
Sorry, buddy. I was going to say, preaching to the choir. Remember we talked about it. Try top 7 in the league adjusted last year.
But yeah, why do you think that there's so much non-belief in Koskinen?
I think it's probably just the history. I think it's that most people don't have access to the numbers like I just cited in terms of being top 7. You know, I think here in Vancouver, there was so much conversation around Markstrom and how, because I think Markstrom's raw numbers like sort of right around Koskinen. And we were talking about him as a Vezina candidate here, and Mikko didn't get any of that buzz. You know, Markstrom was number 1 in a lot of those adjusted numbers. And obviously the conversation in this market tends to be, you know, pretty intense around goaltending and picks up a lot of steam. And he did that in Edmonton. You know, I don't know that it's fair, but I just think his performance last year, and maybe it's because he wasn't the workhorse that Markstrom was. He wasn't that dominant number 1 guy. And there's some decisions there in terms of the coaching that would have played into that in terms of splitting the starts and stuff. But when he was in there, those numbers were exceptional. They were really good. And you're right, he probably does get overlooked in that role unfairly. I will say that, you know, the playoffs, you know, because of some of the goals, appeared to be a step back. But I think to me that's just like that situation and experience. And if he gets back into there again, I think you would expect him to take another step having been through it once before. So, like, I'm a guy who would agree with you. I think that he tends to get overlooked. If I was questioning their tandem, it would just be on, you know, some of the ups and downs that Mike Smith has gone through. But again, he's a guy who's capable of good things as well. So, I think that's probably why, though. It's not like his numbers get overlooked, but also I don't think anybody sees him because of the job share there at times that he's that sort of unquestioned bona fide number 1 guy. And I'm not sure that's fair, but that's just the way perception rolls sometimes.
Kev, always good to catch up with you, man. We look forward to it. It'll be interesting to see what teams do and if anybody gets claim. I have to think New Jersey might be putting a claim in for a goalie here in the next 24 hours.
Well, like I said, this is I'm really curious. I don't have answers as to which way this is going to go, obviously, but you know, I've talked to some teams that, you know, some of the names on waivers and some of the teams that don't have a viable number 3 option. Years past, you claim a guy, you got to keep him in the NHL, and that was the problem. We can't claim this guy because he's not better than our number 2. Boy, would we like to have him in our system, but if we put him into the American League, he's just going to get claimed right back. But this year, if you've got the cap space, and if it's a guy who's not on a big ticket, you can claim him, put him on your NHL roster to keep him as your sort of third goalie, and just have your extra bodies be defensemen or that extra defenseman or forward on your taxi squad. For at least for the short term to start and until you find out you're needing those taxi squad guys and maybe need to make a move later. But, you know, I've had teams talk about considering that, and so I'm kind of curious to see whether anybody looks at it and says, hey, we can upgrade our number 3 goalie spot here because we think we might need 3 this year and our guy doesn't have the experience. So be an interesting 24 hours to see what happens on waivers.
Kev, great stuff, buddy. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you next Monday. Have a great week.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.